What's going on, guys? This is Stefan. I'm your host of Your Body at Work podcast. Thank you for joining us today. Today, I'm super excited. We're going to be having Dr. UK on. She's going to be teaching us about women's health. I'm looking forward to this episode. As you know, I'm a trainer. I work with a lot of women. So it's going to be good to get a sense of understanding of some of the things that you guys might be going through. If you just care about health in general or just have any questions about women's health that's always been on your mind but haven't gotten a chance to ask your doctor, this is a good episode for you. If you're a guy who just want to be aware of some of the things that your lady might be going through, or a friend or a family member, this is also a great episode for you. Take a listen and have fun with it. The first thing I want to start off with, I just want to dive into some of the myths that we hear about women's health. So what are some of the things that women should be aware of but aren't?
Oh, that is a big question. Some of the myths about women's health. Oh, man. I might need us to get a little bit more specific. I'm trying to think about, there could be a whole range of things. I think, honestly, some of the biggest myths have to deal with sexual health. Yeah. I can think of mixed myths that have to deal with pregnancy. I think maybe, I shouldn't say it's a myth, but one of the things I think that people aren't as aware of is the way your health as a whole impacts specifically your sexual health, your reproductive health, in ways that to me, I see very clearly every day. But you know, you may not be able to think about how the things that you're eating day to day are going to affect you when you decide you want to get pregnant. Or I just talked about this in one of my episodes, can affect like how likely you are to get urinary tract infections, things like that. Like our whole body really interacts together at every stage of our lives, every stage of our day. Like I said, I could get into myths with sexual health that get perpetuated every day. But if you have specific things, I'm sure I can rattle them off. But
yeah,
I think
for
it's
sure.
The whole body, whole person kind of aspect of things.
Yeah. So like in terms of like some of the myth, is it like one thing that I find, you mentioned before we go back into the myth, you mentioned something that really stood out to me as a trainer, right? You mentioned food that you eat and how that affects your body and stuff like that. And most times when I'm working with clients, I'd like to tell them that you should see food as food. So tell us a little bit about how important that is in terms of like the food that, if you're trying to get pregnant, how important it is for you to eat healthy, for example.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think before I dive there, one thing I want to highlight is that, and you probably tell people the same thing, right? When I'm talking about eating healthy, I don't mean get the organic products or the most expensive thing that claims like no additives, no this, no that. It's not about boiling it down to the extra organic stuff, right? That's not what I mean when I say eating healthy. I mean portion control, having a well-rounded diet. Because the interesting thing I'll see is that when people are getting ready for either pregnancy or wanting to make sure they reduce the amount of like vaginal infections they have, urinary tract infections, like they think like there are many supplements people will take, right? That they think are going to be either a magic fix or give them exactly what they need, when it's, I think people are missing the fact that a well-rounded diet, right? The adequate amount of fruits, vegetables, not like eating too much fat, getting your protein. Those are the things that our body needs, right? It's actually like we can keep it simple. Cut out the supplements, right? Sometime, obviously, you may take supplements like, I don't know, protein for very specific goals. You could probably speak to that more than I could, but like you can get those things in your food, right? And by eating healthy food. So when we eat empty calories, things that are just going to contribute sugar and contribute things that cause inflammation, like those all affect our body start to finish at every stage of our life. So not overeating, because excess weight is a big thing that can really play a large role. Not eating too much junk and empty calories. Those are going to affect the maintenance of your body and the way your body is able to fight off infections or other conditions. We even see some ways that can affect like people from preventing having excess fibroid growth. I don't want to hang it all on diet because like that's not going to solve all these problems, obviously. And I don't want to blame people saying it's your diet, the reason you have these things. But preventing certain conditions, setting your body up for success in pregnancy by giving it all the vitamins and minerals and nutrients it needs. All that can come from a healthy, well-balanced diet. And those are things that are hard to fix, like the moment you're ready to like get pregnant, right? Those are things that are like lifestyle changes that you have to be able to, or you want to be able to implement to, you know, get your body to really take on, transform in a healthier way so that you can support a pregnancy and the stress that pregnancy brings on your body.
Yeah. And I think also too, like I did a podcast with Mallory, and Mallory was talking about some of the food deserts in the area, especially in the DC area, and how people don't have access to affordable, healthy food. And that can also be a problem, especially like in like minority communities as well. Do you see a lot of times where like, if you're seeing a patient, like, is there like some sort of like a difference between like a minority communities? Do you have a hard time with minority communities?
Yeah, I think for a couple reasons, right? I think in ways that ignore the cultural sensitivity of like what it means to be able to construct a healthy diet, and in ways that ignore the systemic discrimination, disparity, systemic racism that have disadvantaged certain groups of people, right? So like if we talk about like the thing, like since you mentioned food deserts, it is very easy for someone to say like, oh, go pick up some kale and spinach and like fresh eggs. And then like the nearest grocery store that sells good produce, right? Like the area I live, I won't call it out, but like the produce in the grocery store that's right next to us is going bad in like 2 days. So if you don't finish it, you're like throwing away money and wasting food. If you travel to the grocery store that's like some blocks up, or the one like the Whole Foods, of course, their produce like magically lasts for quite a while. You can use and taste good and eat. So it's not so easy, right? And I think those are the ways that people don't recognize or acknowledge, like I said, the way systemic racism has disadvantaged people to the very core, to the point where like even the things to maintain your health, you don't have as good of access to, or it's going to cost more, or things that just don't set you up for success. And the other thing I think is important to recognize is like the cultural aspects, right? Because a lot of times you may get recommendations from your physician or even from a nutritionist who in this country will say, well, make sure you have 2% milk and like eat some peanuts. And like, do you really need to eat your white rice? And I'm like, listen, my parents don't want to eat brown rice and stew. You know, like that is like, that is ignoring like what they have known their whole life. And to tell me that it's impossible to do that within a culture is saying like every other culture in the world doesn't know how to be healthy. No, like it's very possible to be healthy within the bounds of your culture with knowing like portion control, what nutrients each of these provide, and being able to educate ourselves on what's enough for us and what's right for our bodies.
Yeah. And I have a saying, everything in moderation, including moderation. I don't know where I got that from.
But I love it. I love it. So true. Like even when I made kind of like my own lifestyle change, right? I tried cutting things out. I tried cutting out carbs, which I know your body, not carbs. I shouldn't say carbs because I clearly like fruit, other forms of carbs, but cutting out like breads and kind of like the traditional things people think of as carbs. Mm-hmm. I was miserable. I love bread. I love like, you can still eat those things, but like exactly everything in moderation, including moderation.
So. Yeah, I'm like big on ice cream. I don't know if I can give up my ice cream. So
yeah, you know. You'll be miserable. And then it'll all backfire.
Yes. So I want to give people a little bit of background of how we met. Mm-hmm. Like I met you off of Instagram. I saw a friend of mine or a client of mine actually posted one of your videos and stuff. Then mm-hmm. I started checking out your page. And I love the fact that you're out there and you're really just educating women. And I came across something I've never heard before, PCOS. Mm-hmm. And you did a really cool video about it. And I want you to first start off by telling people about your Instagram, what the name of it, and because that's how I came across that video and stuff like that, then we can go from there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have an Instagram that I started. So let me actually back up. So my Instagram handle, by the way, Miss Ukachi, MISUKACHI. Ukachi is my first name, Ukachi Amarowa. Most of my friends call me UK. And I should also point out there are a number of doctors in my immediate family. So I'm like, Dr. Amarowa, I don't know if that quite has a ring to it. Patients have a hard time remembering it. They'll either call me Dr. UK or Dr. E. Dr. UK, let's go with it. So that's how I came up with, like, let's just go by Dr. UK, keep it simple. Hopefully people will be able to remember. Mm-hmm. It actually started out with a personal conversation I had with one of my best friends. It was when the COVID vaccine first came out, and a lot of healthcare workers had already taken it, and including myself. And it was getting around to the time when her age group, she's a young, healthy person, was going to have access to it. She was really nervous about it, right? She was nervous about the ways it would affect fertility, which is a big thing that I, as a physician and as a scientist, never thought of, but was beginning to realize was a very common concern in kind of the general population. And so she started asking me these questions. And the first thing she asked me was like, were you nervous when you took it? And I was like, yeah, of course. It's a new thing. I'm human. Like, even though I have this background, like, there are things that make me nervous because, like, we all have similar human nature, right? Mm-hmm. So I think hearing her acknowledge from my perspective some of the limitations, some of the fears, even from someone who knows things, was like helpful. And then when we started going through all the reasons scientifically or biologically why some of those concerns or fears didn't make sense, or the information, sorry, that we had about it, she was really quickly reassured. And she was like, you know what? This like makes a lot of sense. She's like, Okachi, she calls me Okachi. She refuses to call me UK, even though my parents even call me UK. She says, Okachi, it's like you, like I feel fortunate because I have access to you, right? Like we're on the phone all the time. We FaceTime throughout the day. Any of these questions that come up with my body, with anything, I can ask you about. And then immediately I feel reassured. I feel like this is like information you should share, right? Like people are on the internet sharing all kinds of things. I feel like you should share this knowledge that you have. And I thought about it. We've thought about it before. And I like, didn't want to open Pandora's box of being on the internet and putting myself out there. I'm a pretty outgoing person, but I just know like the internet can be a dangerous place to get yourself wrapped up in. So I held off a little while, and then she kept referring friends to me, right? She said, I have a cousin who has similar questions about the vaccine. Would you mind answering them? And like, she just kept pointing people out to me who had very similar questions. I was like, you know what? She's right. Let me make this video. Maybe it'll help like with vaccine acceptance and like easing people's fears. And so I made the video, and it was very well received. And I was like, wow, people actually find this helpful. Like, it got thousands of views like fairly quickly. I was getting feedback from strangers, friends of friends were passing on the feedback. And like the reason I became a physician, right? The like very pure reason that we all want to go into the medical field is to help people, right? So it was just like very shocking to me to realize how many people had these same questions. How many people, like if I didn't have the knowledge I had, I would have the same fears that I had before I thought through these. So like, maybe she's right. Like people should have access to this. And so I was like, all right, let's start on this venture. And another reason I went into women's health is because I feel like there's a lot of stigma surrounding very common women's health topic, right? Like people talk about discharge and like people talk about them being dirty. And like, I've always hated the stigma that comes along with a lot of women's health issues. And the fact that because there's stigma, people are afraid to ask these questions. And because people also don't have as like, not everybody has a trusting, great relationship with their physician, they're afraid to ask what they deem embarrassing questions. Mm. So I started tackling the topics one by one, making little videos about what I consider like fairly basic and important to know women's health topics that a lot of people are like, oh my God, I never knew that. Or I never knew that's how it works. And with my patients day to day, like my goal when I talk to patients, some people are like, wow, I had a patient the other day when I went into labor and delivery. And they're like, oh, that's the doctor I was telling you about. And I was like, what were you telling her? She said, you just explained so much. And I think a lot of physicians for time constraints or just like not wanting to overwhelm patients with information, try not to go into too much detail. Mm-hmm. But what I've always learned from my patients is like, one, people are very capable of knowing these things, and mm-hmm. two, understanding these things. And two, sometimes like us making decisions is a matter of like sorting out where our priorities lie and what maximizes our priorities. And if they could understand the same things we're understanding that are concerning us, mm-hmm. Maybe they won't make the same decision as us, but it might change their decision, right? So how can you expect people to make the best decision for themselves if they're not informed? Yeah. So like all these things that motivated me to become a physician are the same things that I'm realizing like, oh, I guess I am capable of sharing these with people on social media. So kept up with the videos, kept recording. I was like, okay, let's start to bring more life to this, more persona. I reached out to people for a name. I was like, ideally something dealing with the UK. And I had a friend comes up with education. Education is the main one, EDUKATION. The more, and then eventually when I get to my YouTube series, hopefully that allows for Q&A, you can ask Dr. UK. So the series is known as Education Series, and it is supposed to be women's health with the occasional gems for men from the perspective of a maternal fetal medicine specialist. And so that's how
Yeah. So by you saying that, I also, I thought of a question as you were explaining that. How can women be, when they're going through the process of picking the right physician for them, how can they go about that process? Like, what are some of the questions? What are some of the things that they should be looking for from that physician?
Absolutely. It's tough because some of these things are governed by things that are out of control, which is very obnoxious, right? Insurance and what insurance gives you access to, which physicians. But even within the bounds of what you can get through your insurance, there's still a little bit of navigating we can help you do. You can always ask friends for recommendations. I recommend going to friends and say, hey, you seem to really like your physician, to have a really good relationship. It's up, especially if it's a friend you share a lot of values with, like a lot of the same concerns. Ask for recommendations, because as people, patients will tell you the truth about how they feel about their experience. So going through friends and getting recommendations that way. And honestly, sometimes I try not to like make it sound like doctor shopping, because like that's not like a boutique. Like obviously your health has many other parts to consider, but sometimes it does take trial and error of meeting someone. And the most important thing, which is like hard to measure and hard for anybody to like explain to you or tell you how to do, is just to like go to that visit, try to come with like questions or things you want answered, and see if at that first visit you feel heard. Like it sounds so simple, but did you feel heard? And we're all in a rush. Trust me, I get like, I have some days where I have like 60, 70 like ultrasound patients in a day, or like 40 prenatal visits in a day, and they give me 10, 15 minute slots for each. But there is a way your doctor can talk to you and make sure that you feel heard. And if you don't feel like you were heard, or you feel like you were dismissed, or you feel like they didn't even give you a chance to answer your questions or hear your needs, that's probably not the doctor for you. Because the most important thing for you to consider the doctor for you is someone who you feel like will hear you and listen and try to work with you when you speak up and advocate for yourself. You shouldn't have someone who's defensive when you advocate for yourself. You should have someone who wants to understand you and work with you. And that's the piece of the relationship that a lot of people don't get, that I think is like, just going to take some trial and error sometimes. Go to one doc. I had a friend who scheduled a couple of different appointments with a couple different doctors, all for just an annual physical to see who she kind of vibed with best. And I never thought when I was going through this process that I would advocate for somebody like doing trial visits with different doctors. But like the point of the matter is we're in a time when that does make a difference, and the communication is a huge part of it. So that's kind of probably the best recommendation I could give.
That's an awesome recommendation. And what made you want to like get into medicine? Like, just give us a little brief background of what made you want to get into medicine, and what made you want to specialize, and give us a little bit summary of your background.
Yeah. So I am the daughter of scientists. We're Nigerian. Nice. So as you know, Nigerian, very hard science, math, like poor creatives in our culture. Like we're starting to make a break, or they're starting to make a break for it, which is great. But like science is like the foundation, right? So my father's an OBGYN. My mom is trained as a chemical engineer. We were very fortunate. She like stayed home and raised us after the three of us were born. I have an older brother, younger sister, and then kind of went back into the workforce managing my dad's medical practice. But I remember being young, and like we grew up in a small community kind of in Riverside, California. It's a suburb of LA. And I remember like going to the grocery store. Everybody knew each other at the grocery store. Everybody knew each other at church. And like people would, you know, see my dad and be like, wow, you delivered my son 15 years ago. Do you remember that? And he'd like nod and smile. I don't know that he actually remembered, but it was just the idea that like, no matter how much time had passed, they still recognized him as someone who was part of a very special moment in their life. And I was like, how cool that you can have such an impact in someone's life that they like will remember you, your face, your name for like years to come, and like think positively of you. So that was like kind of the first glimpse of it. And as busy as he was, taking call, barely sleeping at night. I have a similar personality to my dad. We're like very busybody. Like we don't like to sit down. I was like, this seems great. But like, as long as you can fall asleep and wake up, I'm fine with that. Fine. So that's what got me started with my interest in specifically pregnancy and taking care of women through like what's supposed to be a happy time in their life. When I went to college, I went to Princeton University for college. I thought I was going to specialize major in biology because I just thought that's what pre-medical people wanted to do, and then was terrible at it. So for those of you who are not good at biology, not all hope is lost. I'm not good at memorization, which I feel like is like a foundation of biology. So that was not my specialty. My dad was like, don't do that. Don't punish yourself majoring in something you're not interested in. I happened to have taken an economics class in high school and decided I loved it. So I majored in economics with the idea being that like, oh, why don't I kind of explore health economics, healthcare economics? And like, you know, my parents were from Nigeria, and I'd gone back with them and seen them on some medical missions and seen things ranging from access to malaria treatment and prevention, which is something that should be preventable, but is still like impacting a large population of people, access to healthcare, the way Nigeria doesn't really have a great healthcare system. So it's like, maybe that's like the spin I can take, right? Be a physician, but like understand how to impact these things on a more population level. I did economics at Princeton. While I was there, they came up with a global health and health policy certificate. It gave me a chance to go to Ghana and treat pregnant women and children with malaria. And I was like, the policy stuff is cute and fun, but I really like this on the ground work. So I knew I had some public health interests, but like was shifting back towards individual and community level care, like on the ground. But all of that, I will say, kind of like circled back to the economics of it, on the ground stuff, like women's health can impact not only her life and her children's life, her household's life, her community's life, the population, whole economies. Wow, women are pretty powerful. Like, this is like incredible. Like to help a woman and support a woman through health can change whole societies, whole communities. And I was just like, I am sold. Like this is clearly, if I want to make a difference in the world, like this is it. And as I went through my medical training, I then went to Columbia for medical school, did a public health degree, my master's in public health at Harvard between my third and fourth year of medical school, and then finished up. I did my training back, went back to Harvard for my training at Brigham and Women's and Massachusetts General Hospital and my OBGYN residency. And while I was in residency, like I said, I truly love the full spectrum of women's health, from sexual health, gynecologic conditions, pregnancy. But after seeing the way, especially as a society, we're getting more complex health issues, and we're getting heavier as a society. There are a lot of things that are affecting us, but women still want to have their family and they still want to carry a healthy pregnancy and shouldn't have to lose their life wanting to expand their family and live a fruitful life. So I just can't imagine having a pregnant person come to me and having to refer them to someone else because I don't have the training to like take care of them from the most straightforward to the most complicated cases. So I was like, I'm going to have to give up the surgery, I guess. Like, I think I can live without that, but I don't think I can live without treating the whole spectrum of pregnant women. So that's what took me to the decision to specialize in maternal fetal medicine, doing kind of high risk pregnancies, where I'm now at Columbia finishing up my fellowship. So one more year and that's will take me to the conclusion of my journey or the start of my journey, however you think of it.
That's very impressive, actually. And It's so cool that you got to go back home too as well, because not a lot of people have access to doctors, and there are doctors there, but not like as many as. So that was really cool to hear. So in terms of like, let's say someone is out there right now and they're looking to get like pregnant, how can someone optimize, how can a woman optimize their physical and emotional health to reduce complications during pregnancy?
Definitely. Like I said, the ideal would be us maintaining our health as early as possible so we don't develop certain health complications, high blood pressure, diabetes, other things that can affect us during pregnancy. So as early as possible, or even if you hadn't started before but want to start now to kick your body into gear, it's not too late to begin to transform your body. Even losing, if you're overweight, even losing 2 pounds, 5 pounds, 10 pounds, every 5 pounds makes a big difference with how your body responds to the stress of pregnancy. And getting your nutritional stat in a good place helps set your body up for a pregnancy that can kind of survive and carry on to term. So the first step I would say is any of those like difficult lifestyle changes that you've been struggling to like motivate yourself to make, maybe this can be the, I've seen pregnancy motivate people to quit smoking, who have smoked for like 30 years of their life. And they're like, nope, my baby's going to be affected. Just keep in mind, the same way people worry about what goes into your body when you're carrying the pregnancy, that's the same mindset I want us to have before we start getting pregnant. Because remember, that pregnancy starts in there from the second the egg and the sperm come together. It's not when the baby's just growing. It starts from the beginning, and we want to set up a good environment. Exercise, if you hadn't been able to kick yourself into gear, like even if it's as simple as like 30 minutes a day or even 5 days a week, start light. Work yourself up. You don't have to like become a marathon runner or a bodybuilder in the time before you get pregnant. But small little habits go a long way. And then making sure any health conditions you already do have are under good control. So I always mention like the standard ones are like high blood pressure, diabetes. Don't stop any medications cold turkey. Sometimes people will come to me like, I wanted to get pregnant, so I stopped taking my insulin because I didn't know how that would affect the pregnancy. Let's not forget, it's not just things that like can harm a baby that we have to worry about. It's the things that are helping the baby that we want to make sure you're continuing. So See your doctor before you even start if you already know you want to get pregnant, right? So see the doctor, make sure that the medications you're on are controlling your blood pressure. Because it's like, while high blood pressure and diabetes give you higher risk, it's really like uncontrolled blood pressure and uncontrolled diabetes that are like the big risk factor. So you want to go to your doctor for any health conditions you have that includes ones that you don't even think are a problem anymore. Like, oh, I have asthma, but it's like really not that bad. I manage it. It feels under control. Just go to your doctor and check, because what you think is under control may not be under control. Go to your doctor, make sure all your health conditions are well managed. They will tell you what medications you may need to stop or switch over. And again, add healthy diet and exercise. Even if you have conditions already, you still want those, because those can help manage those conditions. And then this will be the one time I recommend supplements. Take a prenatal vitamin. You don't have to take 30,000 supplements. Literally, a prenatal vitamin has everything you need. And it's really mainly for things like the folic acid that help like the baby's brain formation and neural system formation is the main one. There's a couple other ones that help to have, but you don't need to go crazy with your DHEA, zinc, whatever. Like, it's just keep it simple. Simple is better.
And I usually sit across from a lot of people and they come up to me and they, when I ask them, I said, oh, so what is the goal? Why are you here? And in the gym, obviously. And they were like, oh, my doctor says you eat well and exercise. Do you feel like, there should be some sort of like a collaboration? Like there are right now, right? But do you feel like we should be collaborating a lot more, like personal trainers and the medical field and physical therapists to like help people?
You couldn't have said it better myself. Like, I remember when I was going through my OBGYN training, I used to say the same thing. I'd be like, yep, let's try to like lose a little bit of weight, eat healthier, exercise. I know it's tough. And then they like are looking at me like, okay, what do? I use my FitnessPal app. I don't know, maybe try that. It's embarrassing, right? Like, I give a recommendation for a medication and I can tell you what dose, how many times to take it. And I'm not expecting myself to be the expert in physical exercise or even nutrition, but like, we should know the basics. The same way I should know the basics about like heart health and things you need, I should know the basics about physical health. And I get it. It's one of the reasons like people, especially minorities, sometimes are resistant to go to the doctor. They're right. Like, everything is fixed with a pill. Everything is fixed with a treatment after the fact. It's like, wow, because we do such a poor job of teaching physicians the things that maintain health, the preventive things. One time I was like, man, I wish I could write a prescription for like them to go to a gym or like collaborate with a gym to be able to write a prescription, say like what goals I need, how I'm trying to help them get to, or like at least be able to describe, like sometimes patients who have pelvic floor weakness, like they might leak urine or have kind of a bulge or pressure. I'm like, okay, we're going to send you to a pelvic floor physical therapist, or you have back pain, I'm going to send you to a physical therapist. They're like, great. What exercises are they going to have me do? I don't know, but they're great. They're experts. I should at least know the basics, and I can explain like a very select few things, but I really wish we could redesign or begin to think about a system that is more collaborative. Like, as you usually say, I've heard, holistically, right? Like, more than a word to use, like it's too fragmented.
And like with the pelvic floor issue, like especially like mothers who have like a C-section and stuff like that, sometimes like they go through like physical therapy and after physical therapy, sometimes to stop after like a couple of weeks later. You mentioned that some you work with some of those things. Do you feel like, would you recommend, will you tell like mothers to like look into that a little bit more, strengthening the core a little bit more? Would you recommend to like for them to work with health professional, physical health professional, to kind of get them to maintain their physical fitness throughout post-pregnancy?
Absolutely. I think one of the things we often talk about with pregnancy, especially as obstetricians, is the fact that, because I said, because people are so motivated to make sure they and their baby are their healthiest selves during the pregnancy, it's, I shouldn't say easy, but it's kind of, it's so easy to get people to go to their different specialists to do physical therapy. A lot of, you know, people experience back pain just from the normal changes that a pregnant body will cause. And they'll be willing to go to specialists and people who can help them do that. And it's the same thing, like I said, before the pregnancy. The ideal is if we can strengthen and fine tune and get those things in working order before we get to the pregnancy. The same thing is after, right? And we're noticing this thing we're calling like the fourth trimester, or like maintaining things post pregnancy. It's like the second the baby's out, once that 6 week period is done, everything drops off. Like the specialists they were seeing, they're like, oh, okay, maybe I'll get around to that later. The physical fitness, physical training, physical therapy they were doing, it's like, okay, I've like gotten to a point that's manageable, or that like the symptoms are gone for now. But those same, pregnancy is a test on your body. So the things you experience while you're pregnant may be the things, both like health condition wise, like blood pressure issues or diabetes in pregnancy, certain pains that you get are likely going to be the things that, as over time, as your body gets its normal kind of wear and tear and aging, will come back. Like your body's just revealing it to you a little earlier because it pushed your body to the limits. So yeah, we can maintain the things that we were working on fixing during the pregnancy. It can help hold off some of those things that will come with just like normal aging.
And what would you say the best time for some like someone to get back into physical fitness post-pregnancy?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is one that thankfully there are quite specific, or more or less specific recommendations for, just based on what type of delivery you had and what needs to heal, right? So people will be surprised to hear, if you have a vaginal delivery, it's common to get like a vaginal tear. So that's kind of what we think of as the healing site, right? It's common to get a vaginal tear that may take like a week, a couple weeks to heal. We say like no intercourse for 6 weeks, because like that's the healing site. You want all those stitches that may have been there to come together. The vagina heals beautifully. It's got so many lovely blood supply. It's going to do its work. You just need to give it a little time. But your core is not necessarily healing, right? And like other places in your body aren't healing. So I tell most people, you'll probably start to feel like kind of more like your normal self in the first week, maybe 2 weeks after you have your baby from a vaginal delivery. And it's okay to like, obviously listen to your body. Don't like push it too far, but you can start taking your walks, honestly, within the first week. You can start being more active within the first 1 or 2 weeks, including core exercises, whatever. You just like take it slow and like build back up to, you know, kind of the conditioning you had before this like big change that happened to your body. C-sections are a little different because there are major layers on your stomach and your abdomen that are sewn together and need to really heal. And so if you do too much heavy lifting, we say no heavy lifting for like 6 weeks, and that's anything above like 10, 15 pounds, right? Like you can lift your baby, but don't lift heavy groceries. And I wouldn't like push your core too much until 6 weeks out. A C-section is the one where like, it's okay to get in a little bit of cardio, like maybe a little bit of strength training, but like, unless you're working with a professional, I worry that people are going to do things that they think are like strength training that doesn't use their core and actually uses their core. So that's why I usually caution people who have had C-sections to hold off on anything that can engage your core or be heavy lifting until 6 weeks out, when things are fully, all the layers that we sewed back together are fully healed. But you should still be able to do some activity after that first like couple weeks when the soreness has really come down and you're feeling like you can move around comfortably.
Yeah. So in my business, I work with a lot of women, and sometimes they will come up to me and they'll tell me, Steph, it's that time of the month. I've heard stuff like shark week. So I'm right.
Yeah, so interesting terms for these.
Yeah, exactly. So this is really good for me because I'm learning a lot from you right now. And I'm pretty sure the people who are listening are also learning a lot as well. So that brings me to my next question. And let's talk about working out and the menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice? Like, should we ease off on the workouts? What's your opinion about that?
Not at all. Push it to the limit, full force. I think the biggest thing about working out on your menstrual cycle is that it can be uncomfortable, right? And there may even be women who are suffering from certain conditions that are making their menstrual cycle more uncomfortable than normal. And they don't realize it's not normal. Like if they have fibroids that give them cramps and some of those cramps can be really debilitating. Like they can wipe women out for days, which are things that you should seek care for, right? Like that's not normal if the pain is so bad that it takes you out for days, or the bleeding is so heavy that you're changing your pad every hour. Those are probably related to conditions that we need to get looked at and treated anyways. But the biggest thing is this discomfort, right? Like especially women who don't use menstrual cups or tampons, using a pad, it's not fun to feel the blood come out. It might be a little graphic, but it's really not fun. When you get up, when you bearing down is not dangerous. It's just your uterus is in the process of expelling the stuff it's supposed to expel, and giving a little pressure by bearing down can help that process. It's not a dangerous thing. It's just an uncomfortable thing. So if you can navigate it by managing something that allows it to still be comfortable, either a tampon that should be the right size tampon, too small is going to cause leakage, too heavy is going to, too big is going to be uncomfortable, or the right size menstrual cup so you don't leak around it. Or if your flow is not that heavy and you're not that bothered wearing a pad, whatever works for you, it's about maximizing your comfort so that you hopefully can get a good, effective workout in. But there's nothing dangerous about working out while you're on your period. It's just unfortunately a comfort thing. And I get it. It can be quite uncomfortable to be moving around, especially on those heavy days of your period. So maybe give them a rest day or two on those heavy days that are so bad.
Okay, cool. And I was going to say, how can I provide some sort of empathy for my clients and to see where they're coming from, to understand them when they're going through that period. What are some of the things that I can do as a guy who I can't really relate to what they're going through to be there for them?
I love that you asked that question. I do. And I love it because it's part of the reason I also love hearing about so many males who have been watching the videos. They're I'm learning so much about what female, about what women and females go through. And I love that you're taking an interest in this and kind of understanding what's either your partner or friend or somebody you're going to be interacting with. And it is tough, right? Because at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to understand, right? So I think the best advice I can give you is the best advice I give people, doctors, right? Is you just have to listen and have to try to more or less take their word for it. If they say they're really feeling like they can't push them, encouragement goes a long way. And I'm sure you use a lot of positive reinforcement, but listening to and maybe they won't feel as comfortable explaining exactly what it is that feels uncomfortable in that moment. So you could try to talk them through it, elicit what it is that is uncomfortable. Maybe I can help by changing the workout or helping adjust it so that we can do something that's comfortable for you, but making sure they feel heard, they feel listened to. You try to troubleshoot with things that are still within their comfort zone. And at the end of the day, if they say it's too much, you just have to take their word for it, because it's just people know what their bodies feel like, and it's hard to understand outside of it. But the listening and empathy, it sounds like you already do listen. And that, I think, goes a long way. That's what people want when they're talking to people about things that are, really hurting them or affecting them.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been really learning a lot, actually, because I think about 80% of my clients are women. So I sometimes hear a lot, and I just, go.
We have the whole experience with us.
I just shake my head and I shake my head and be like, okay, cool. that's my normal reaction. So I'm learning a lot here. So the next question would be, I want to go into the importance of getting screening every year, a yearly screening. How important is that for women to do that?
I'm so glad you asked this one, because this is one that's actually changed over the years. And as I talk to my friends, I'm realizing that some of their own physicians haven't told us the reason, one, what's the purpose of yearly screenings, and two, the reason why they may or may not need certain tests. So traditionally, typically, women thought of yearly screenings as a time to get their pap smear. The pap smear is, contrary to what many people think, is not just the pelvic exam where they put the speculum in to look at things, but they're actually like doing a swab and a sampling of the cervix to test for signs of cervical cancer or early changes prior to cervical cancer. So that was like the yearly pap smear was the thing that like brought women back. But what we've realized with pap smears, I'm going to start there, is that cervical cancer doesn't develop over 1 year. It doesn't even develop over 5 years. Like, honestly, sometimes it can take, as long as you're getting your like regular checkups to see the pre-cancerous changes before the cancerous changes, it can take sometimes 5 to 10 years before it develops. So what we realized by doing pap smears on women who are healthy, like I'm not talking about women who have other immunocompromised conditions that can make it go faster, but for healthy people, you're doing pap smears, which are not comfortable, every single year, doing more, getting more false positives and scares that end up being fine. And then women are going through like more and more tests they don't need to go through. So the recommendation for pap smears has actually changed that you don't need a pap smear not more than every 3 years if you're healthy and they've been normal. Some even stretch it to 5 years when they test with HPV. A lot of doctors still feel a little bit uncomfortable about that, but like evidence shows like over 30, 5 years with HPV testing is fine. So the pap smears are no longer the thing that are driving us. The reason I say it's probably still important to go to your doctor and get yearly screening is because a lot of people use their OBGYN as their like primary care physician. If you have a primary care physician, fine. Just like go to your OBGYN when you're due for your pap smear. But if your OBGYN is a, kind of like your primary care physician, then they'll want to, when you get to the correct age limits, test you yearly, screen for diabetes, check your blood pressure, make sure you don't have signs of developing high blood pressure, and check in with other components of your usual health to make sure that is in working order. So I would say for that reason, it's probably important to still have your yearly checkups with your OBGYN or your primary doctor, and then the pap smears and other things you can check like every few years if it's normal, but you kind of just follow the doctor's recommendations because they know exactly how long you'll need to wait based on your specific story.
That's really awesome. That's been very informative for me. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you would like to talk about?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I think I mentioned yearly checkups or like seeing your doctor and yearly screening. I think I will say one more reason why I think it's helpful to have yearly screening. There are some things that we don't have good screening for, right? Like we don't have good screening for things like ovarian cancer, breast cancer, like the breast exams can sometimes be helpful. But I think being in tune to the different things your body's going through and having someone to kind of bounce that information off of yearly who can help put it together and make sure, is this normal? Is that abnormal? It also helps build a better working relationship with your physician and just like kind of build a trusting relationship so that you can feel like you have better collaboration. The other thing I think I wanted to touch base upon, and I don't know if this is something you're planning on getting to, if this is something I should just jump right into, was in regards to the ways in which health and especially like kind of helping to regulate your weight can affect your menstrual cycle and even like future health problems.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Should I just go ahead and jump into that?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I know we talked a lot about kind of weight regulations, menstrual cycles, knowing your body, knowing what's healthy. We talked a little bit about PCOS and the ways that things can affect your body. I think the other thing to know about being healthy, I think I talk about it a lot in the sense of like planning a pregnancy or being pregnant, but there are so many reasons why being at a healthy weight for us, being healthy from a nutritional standpoint, being healthy from a physical standpoint are important for health issues and health consequences that you may not recognize they're connected to. And I hate to talk about weight because like weight is one of those things that like you can't gauge everything by just weight, like as you're well aware of, right? So I'm not even going to say like it's just a matter of whether you're over or underweight, but for example, there are times when I'm going to start on the spectrum on the end of the spectrum we don't usually start on. There are times when you can overdo it. Like either people who unfortunately suffer from eating disorders and don't eat consume enough calories, or even people who work out so excessively, or not even, I shouldn't even say excessively, but like maybe professional athletes or who do work out excessively. I know people who work out like 6-7 times a day because it is a compulsion for them.
Yeah.
Not giving your body the right balance of nutrients and nutrition and energy and sustenance, even to the point where you're like taking away too much and not giving enough back, that actually can do things like cause stress in your body, high cortisol levels, and can shut down kind of your brain access that feeds to your ovaries and provides important hormones and things for health. So I'll give kind of like a more concrete example. People who suffer from eating disorders, because their body's kind of under that chronic stress and their kind of brain signals to their ovaries have shut down, they don't produce enough estrogen, right? And that estrogen is important for their bone health. They may get fractures very easily, important for your heart health, for your brain health. So there is such thing as doing too much, right? Like, yeah, even on that end of the spectrum. And then of course, on the other end of the spectrum, having excess weight, excess kind of like adipose tissue or fat cells that causes inflammation, that causes us to overproduce or overconvert estrogen, you have very high estrogen levels. And that can put you at risk for things like endometrial cancer, breast cancer, everything in moderation. Yes, even moderation, but everything in moderation, even when it comes to like your health and wellness. Don't overdo it and go to one end, and don't underdo it and go to the other end. These things all kind of add up and can affect your body in ways that you may not recognize immediately.
Yeah. And you mentioned something really interesting. And I feel like when most trainers are getting their certifications, they just get the certification and they think you're going to just like come up with an exercise program and walk the client through the exercise program. But you're dealing with different personalities, and some of those clients, they're bringing their own issue into the sessions. Every day I'm learning from my clients, right? And yeah, if I'm working with someone with eating disorder, I've never experienced that before, I don't know what they might be feeling or thinking, and I don't have no problem admitting that, right? When it comes to like working out and motivating you and providing intensity, knowledge, accountability, I can do all of that. But if I don't know, if I'm not able to pick up the signs, like to say, okay, this actually what might be going on,
right?
What would be your advice to me to be able to be sort of, I guess, understanding, but not overdo it? Because sometimes as trainers, we can be really harsh.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I've heard stories.
So. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it's so tough. And this is like, as you were saying this, I was like, wow, he's so right. There are a number of reasons why physicians, people in the medical field should collaborate with everybody who's helping optimize someone's health, right? We all have different pieces of information about what people are going through. Like, I don't know, like maybe they're trying their hardest or their darndest, or they can't get access to their physical fitness sessions, right? And I don't have that piece of information. And you may not have other pieces of information about their own health.
Yeah.
Oh God, that one might be one I don't have an answer to. I don't know if I have a good answer to that, right? Like I said, like you listen, you know what I will say actually? I think this is part of what, because this is something I've had to take and learn as a physician. This is why when we train, they teach you to ask people's history, their medical problems, their medications, their allergies, their surgical history, their social history, their family history. And as you get further along, you kind of like, not smart, but like at the social history, you're like, okay, is that really going to impact them right now? Like if I have limited amount of time, like, is it okay to cut that out? Like their family history, like, oh, that doesn't necessarily relate to cervical cancer. So do I really have to ask that right now? But the social aspect of people's lives plays into their motivations, like their ability to take on certain stressors, to the way they respond to things in ways that those of us dealing with health sometimes forget. So I would say my best advice is the same advice I give to myself, which is like getting to know the person outside of that issue that we're tackling, right? Building relationships with them so that you get to know their social circumstance, their social history, because that's when people start to reveal things to you and open up to you and work with you and collaborate with you in a way that you wouldn't have expected, just asking, how many health problems do you have? Like, what medications do you take? Like, did you do your sit-ups yesterday? There's more when you get to know the person that you guys can connect with and reveal all the things that are going to help you just take care of them in a better way. So same advice I give to myself, for what it's worth.
That's a really great advice. And I love the fact that you mentioned the sort of like an assessment where you get to know the person. It's so sad because I feel like, and I'm not trying to bash commercial gyms, but it's more of the sense where they're just the one, the client, so they don't really care to like go and dive deep into that. And I think one thing that I do when I'm talking to new clients at the gym, I try to find their why, right? That emotional reason behind their decision. So like, for example, if someone came up to me and they're like, oh, I want to get in shape, I want to look good for summer, I'd be like, why? I'd be like, oh, I want to look good because I just don't like the way I look right now. Like they're quick to show you a picture. This is how I used to look. So I want to go back. Then I'll be like, why do you want to go back to that? Why is that so important for you?
Right.
Then I'll be like, because when I was at this weight, when I look like this, I felt this way. I don't feel this way now. I feel X, Y, and Z. So by me trying to really, you know, just keep asking them why, then I can peel back the layers, right? And I can get to know exactly what they are. Because sometimes what they're asking or what they're wanting, there's something deeper to that. And I'm trying to get what that is.
Dig into, the more and more we talk, I'm learning a lot too. And I'm realizing how much more similar our professions and we are than I even realized, right? Now I'm like, wow, when people find a personal trainer, I feel like I should give them the same advice as when they find a doctor, right? Because you're right. Like, not to bash our fields, there's like many reasons why we've come to do things the way we do things. But, you know, like, you move along and you start to realize how important some of the fundamentals and the foundations and like just the human connection is. So now I'm like, wow, when you find a personal trainer, find someone you feel like listens to you and wants to know why and finds the priorities. And it's amazing how similar it is.
Yeah, it really is. And every day you meet different situation and you tackle different things as well. And I think important rest, what I'm learning personally from my side is just being able to rest and be present when I'm interacting with clients, because I feel like it can be really mentally exhausting. Then if you're just going through the motions, you can really provide the coaching knowledge for that client and be the best that you can for that person. And it sucks, but it goes back to moderation again, right? Everything in moderation. So train, exactly. But don't train too much. Have some time to like do your thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I really learned a lot, and hopefully you can come back. We can do something else again. You talked about sexual health. I feel like we talk a lot about emotional health, physical health, but we don't really, especially in my circle, my personal circle, I don't really interact with any of my people about, and we don't really talk about sexual health. I feel like that's a topic that a lot of people don't really speak on. So that would be really important to chat with you on that.
I would love to come back because I've had a great time. And two, I would absolutely love to talk about sexual health. That's like one of the things that maybe everything about women's health gets me going, but that's one thing that really gets me going and just like really trying to dispel some myths. And I feel like when you come from a place of understanding what causes these things, like it really helps everybody like exercise less judgment and less stigma. And so I would absolutely love to find a time when I can come back and we can dive into that a little bit more.
That is really awesome. Then once again, can you like tell us where people can find you, your awesome Instagram videos and all of that good stuff?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram or Twitter, actually, but Instagram has the better quality of the videos, at Miss Ukachi, MISUKACHI. If you go to my IGTV, they're on my feed, but if you go to my IGTV, you can pop down, you can see the whole series, hashtag education. I catch a video. I release it every Thursday, for now, at least every Thursday, with a new topic. And I take requests at any time in my DMs, anywhere. You can also find me on Facebook. I do have a Facebook page, Dr. Ukachi Amarwa. I think there's even a handle for that. I think it's at Miss Ukachi is Dr. UK, but find me by my full name on Facebook or at Miss Ukachi on Twitter or Instagram specifically. And follow me, subscribe to the series, and you'll see a notification every time I release a new video.
Awesome. And let us know when you get the YouTube going so we can definitely talk about it a little bit more.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you. Will do.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on. It was
fun.
Thank
you so much for having me, Steph. Yes, I've had a blast.
Well, thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was an informative episode. Please do us a huge favor to support us. Could you please go on Instagram, follow Your Body of Work podcast, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening to us right now, just feel free to subscribe. So when we put a new episode out, you can be the first to know. Thank you so much.